Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, August 15th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the Independence Party distances itself from its own U.S. Senate candidate. Still no disaster aid for many counties after flooding, and Minneapolis's mayor wants a tax increase. Minnesota's unemployment rate remained steady last month, despite an overall loss of jobs in the state. Matt Sepik reports.
The Department of Employment and Economic Development says Minnesota's jobless rate for July was 4.5%, the same as in June and well below the national rate. State labor market economist Steve Hine says Minnesota's unemployment rate stayed flat because of a shrinking workforce driven largely by baby boomer retirements.
We're very soon going to hit a point in which there's not going to be as many available workers out there to fill jobs at the same rate that we have been filling them over the last couple of years or so.
The department also says the state lost 4,200 payroll jobs in July, and the June gain was revised downward. But state officials question the accuracy of the seasonal adjustments used to calculate the month-to-month job count. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, Minnesota's annual job growth far outpaced the national rate in July. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Senator Al Franken and 1st District Congressman Tim Walz hope to push legislation through Congress that will improve mental health services for veterans. Mark Zadeklik reports.
The two Democrats met Thursday in St. Paul with the family of Adam Hotelling, a former soldier who was deployed to the Persian Gulf and who took his life 2 years ago after returning home. Franken says Congress needs to act to make sure veterans are getting mental health services when they need them.
It's absolutely unacceptable and tragic that we have this rate. Any one suicide is one too many, but we now are looking at 22 a day of veterans across this country, and that is a tragedy.
Walz has a bill in the House. Franken is looking to put together companion legislation in the Senate. Mark Zadeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
Leaders of the Independence Party of Minnesota are disowning their own nominee for U.S. Senate. The party's endorsed candidate lost in Tuesday's primary election to a gadfly candidate. Several party members say they're worried about its future. Tom Scheck reports.
In 1998, the state's best-known Independence Party member took the stage in Shakopee and declared victory in the race for governor. That night, Jesse Ventura was a member of the Reform Party, which he later transformed into the IP.
The American dream lives on in Minnesota because we shocked the world.
Now, several members of the IP are shocked at what's happened to the party, which has qualified as a major party like the Democrats and Republicans for years under state law. On Tuesday night, Kevin Terrell, the candidate party leader's back to challenge DFL Senator Al Franken, lost his primary bid. He received just 1,376 votes. Self-proclaimed Tea Party member Steve Carlson won the race with just over 2,100 votes. Carlson couldn't be reached for comment, but has posted several rambling video monologues on his website.
I'm a serious politician who writes and performs songs and raps.
Carlson was the Independence Party's candidate for Congress in the 4th District in 2010 and 2012. Among other things, he has defended a Missouri Senate candidate's remarks about legitimate rape, alleged a war on white males, and said the person who shot and killed Trayvon Martin provided a valuable service. And after Tuesday night's victory, he's the candidate who will appear on the top of the ticket for the Independence Party.
I'm a Minnesotan. I can carry this party forward this year.
We won't support Mr. Carlson.
Mark Jenkins is the Independence Party chair.
I've followed his website, followed his stances on the issues. He doesn't even begin to reflect the Independence Party's views on issues.
Jenkins says low voter turnout and Carlson's Scandinavian name are probably the two biggest reasons he defeated Terrell. But the party has other problems. Hannah Nicolet, the endorsed candidate for governor, failed to qualify for a public subsidy that would have helped fund her campaign. She needed to raise $35,000 from other sources to qualify for the subsidy, which would have totaled around $178,000. Still, Jenkins downplayed the party's problems.
There aren't any issues that we haven't faced before, which is, struggling for the resources.
This year's election is critical for the IP because at least one statewide candidate has to get 5% of the vote or more to maintain major party status. Failing to do so would mean losing the public subsidy and instant ballot access. Past IP gubernatorial candidates Tim Penny, Peter Hutchinson, and Tom Horner easily exceeded that mark. Jenkins says party officials will redouble their efforts to ensure the IP stays a major party. But others are worried. Jack Aldrich, former chair of the IP, characterized the state of the party as unhealthy.
What we're doing right now is not resonating with the broader public. So, yeah, we have to do some real soul searching.
Others say Carlson's win was a devastating result for a party trying to find an identity. Matt Lewis currently sits on the board of the IP, but has not actively participated in party activities since February. He said the short-term concern is maintaining major party status.
I mean, I don't think anyone could argue that the trend lines are good. I think that the infrastructure is still there, that this party is always one big name or one multimillionaire away.
A few party leaders are still optimistic. Peter Tharaldson is a longtime party member running to be a local party chair. He said the IP always fares poorly in primaries, but bounces back in the general election.
But if you look at it as a movement in terms of the electorate size and you look at recent polls, you actually see that the independence party identity, not just independent, but independence party identity, is actually up considerably.
There are several issues that could generate support for IP candidates this year. The party continues to bill itself as a destination for those who are liberal on social issues and conservative on fiscal matters. It also adopted a party platform calling for the legalization of marijuana in Minnesota. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The storm and flood damage earlier this summer may be a memory for some, but three of the most populous counties in Minnesota are still waiting to find out if they'll qualify for federal aid. So far, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Dakota counties are not on the president's disaster declaration list. And some officials, including Governor Dayton and a majority of Minnesota's congressional delegation, are urging the feds to change that. Peter Cox has more.
After heavy rains in June, a large section of Upper D Street in the city of Mendota cracked. Officials worried the crack could lead to a landslide, endangering the bluffside homes 100 feet below. So they closed the street, commissioned an engineering study, and applied for assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. But FEMA officials question whether the cracked road is a direct result of the storms. Mendota Mayor Brian Melke says the city's study found the slope may have been moving before the summer rains.
There was no evidence of any future catastrophic things that might occur, which is what did occur in June. And we couldn't have foreseen that or prevented it.
With a total budget of less than $200,000, the city would need at least five times that to rebuild and reinforce Upper D Street. Melke says the federal disaster assistance seems like the best solution.
You think that's what FEMA's there for, is for federal emergencies, and this is as bad of an emergency as we've had in a long time in the city of Mendota.
Mendota is in Dakota County, which along with Hennepin and Ramsey counties, is still hoping to be added to the president's disaster declaration. Standing water has kept emergency managers from assessing the damage to roads and other public infrastructure in many areas. But State Emergency Management Director Chris Ide says disputes between the state and FEMA are also slowing the process. She says that's true for damage in Mendota and the landslide near the University of Minnesota's Fairview Hospital in Minneapolis.
There's difference of interpretation on why they failed at that particular time and some question on whose property it actually is and the whole impact of that on not only the road below in the case of Minneapolis, but the impact to the hospital. Those are the things we are trying to work out with FEMA.
Each county has to hit certain dollar marks using a population-based formula to be eligible for disaster declaration. Ide says that for Hennepin, Ramsey, and Dakota counties to hit those marks, the two mudslides and flood damage involving the St. Paul Port Authority terminal must be included. FEMA spokesman Dan Schulman would not get into the specifics, but did speak generally about the federal agency's approach.
So by law, FEMA cannot pay for damage that is not related to the specific incident. It is an issue that we work with in every disaster to make sure that we are identifying only those damages that were directly attributable to the incident.
He says disputes are sometimes part of the process, and overall, FEMA has a good relationship with the state. Last week, Governor Mark Dayton wrote a letter to President Obama asking that 6 more counties and a tribal government be added to the disaster declaration. 3 of those counties, Wright, Lyon, Watonwan, and Boys Fort Band of Chippewa in Couchiching County, were added yesterday. ID says next Wednesday is the deadline for the state to ask for Hennepin, Ramsey, and Dakota counties to be added.
We can always ask for an extension of that deadline, but we feel that we have the documentation necessary. So right now we're still in conversations.
To date, FEMA has added 35 counties and 3 tribal communities for the declaration. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges used her first budget address yesterday to press for increased spending on affordable housing, police, recycling, and a host of other programs. To help pay for her priorities and cover the cost of inflation, the mayor wants to raise the city's property tax levy by 2.4%. Curtis Gilbert has the story.
For most of the last decade, Minneapolis spent each budget cycle looking for ways to cut spending because of a struggling economy and reduced state aid. But now, Minneapolis is getting more state money, and it's experiencing a building boom with more than $1 billion in construction permits pulled in each of the last 3 years. So Hodges isn't proposing any cuts to city staff or services. The new mayor is ready to spend new money for a change. She says it's what Minneapolis voted for.
We voted to end our racial disparities and move toward a brighter future all together, and this budget invests in that. We voted for a city that is growing in ways that builds on our strengths in deliberate, intentional ways, and this budget invests in that. We voted for a city where we are the best possible stewards of our resources as we can be, and this budget invests in that.
Racial disparities persist across Minneapolis. Minority residents lag behind the white population in areas such as income, health, and housing. Hodges' proposal is similarly broad-based, with small funding increases spread over a wide array of city programs that disproportionately benefit minorities. She wants more homes inspected for lead, more students connected with summer jobs, more parents educated to be good mentors, more assistance for small business owners, and more grants for community organizations. Many of those items come relatively cheap. $50,000 here, $75,000 there. The biggest ticket proposal for helping minority residents is an extra $1 million for affordable housing. The most expensive item aimed at growing the city is $3.5 million to fill a funding gap in the planned renovation of Nicollet Mall. Under the priority of running the city well, Hodges is focusing on public safety. She wants to add more than $3.5 million to the police budget. That would grow the force by 10 officers, fill expected vacancies, hire more civilian community service officers, and outfit police with body cameras. Hodges also proposes hiring a class of firefighters and 4 additional 911 operators. But one of the most visible changes for residents in Hodges' proposed budget is what the mayor calls organics recycling.
The entire city will be able to recycle food waste and surprising things like cotton balls and dryer lint. I'm guessing you're applauding for the first time dryer lint has ever been said in a budget speech.
The city is under pressure from Hennepin County to roll out the composting program next year. But some members of the city council are skeptical. President Barb Johnson isn't convinced it's worth the $8 million price tag to launch the program. And she thinks her North Minneapolis constituents will be reluctant to separate their compostable waste from the rest of their garbage.
It's very expensive to provide organics collection because you have to send another truck down the alley. You know, if not everybody participates, it can be a very costly endeavor.
Hodges would pay for the program with a $40 yearly fee for every household, whether they participate in the program or not. There are other fee increases in the budget proposal, too. 3% more for water, 1.8% more for sewer. And then there's the 2.4% property tax levy increase, identical to what St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman proposed yesterday. Cam Winton, a Republican who ran against Hodges in last year's mayor's race, says taxes are a concern.
You know, I'm not crying wolf here. I've had plenty of opportunities. I've taken them. I work hard. I make money. And so if my property tax rate goes up by 2.4% personally, okay, fine. I'll pay that and I'll continue to love living in the city. But there are many residents of the city who are not as fortunate.
Hodges says even with the proposed increase, only half of city residents will actually see their property taxes rise next year. The city's Board of Estimate and Taxation weighs in on the levy next month. The city council begins its work on the budget after that. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. I'll be off Monday. Have a great weekend. I'll see you again later next week.